Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 20th of August, Anno Domini 2011, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to use, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Grab some booze. It's afternoon.
Yeah,
it's after five somewhere.
Yeah. Somewhere, anywhere. Okay. Depends on where you put the yardarm as to where the sun's over it. So
that's true.
I have a very movable yardarm. Google has pulled a quick one and acquired Motorola Mobility for a mere $12.5 billion with a B dollars in cash. Google has secured itself a position in the business of manufacturing mobile media devices and made itself a front runner in the end of the PC era. Google, a powerhouse unto itself, has a history of profitable acquisitions. Their takeover of Android in 2005 turned the company from a small mobile software company to a household name. Now Google is making its mark with Motorola. Google's acquisition of Motorola means it can produce mobile devices at competitive prices. Mobile devices at competitive prices. They ought to really...
It almost rhymes.
Their slogan. Yeah. Complete with all the innovation that helps to define the company. Motorola Mobility Holdings, Inc., MMI, has already started to reap in the benefits as shares of MMI jumped 36.7% upon news of the acquisition. The implications of the acquisition are brilliant. While people are moving towards a mobile media-centric lifestyle, tablets, smartphones, and who knows what's next, Google stepped in to give Apple a run for their money. After all, Apple's recently fluctuating triumph over Exxon, as the largest company in the world, indicates there's a lot of money to be made in the market. Furthermore, phones running the Android system have become increasingly popular, accounting for 43.4% of smartphones sold in the second quarter. If the near future really sees an end to the PC era, then phone carriers and producers may indeed have a bright future. So our question of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google buys Motorola Mobility. And your choices are brilliant, stupid, it's all about the patents, baby, and don't lose your focus, Google. So far, we have 32 votes, and it's all about the patents, baby, is in the lead, followed by don't lose your focus, Google, followed by stupid. Two people think it's brilliant. But you're going to have a lot more to say than just those four choices. So when you're done taking the poll, check the yellow box underneath the poll, click on give us your opinion, and it will take you to another phenomenal website where you can enter your opinion on this question. So far, we've got about five people who have given us their opinion, and I'm looking forward to yours. And one of the choices of this, of course, of course, that's our question to you. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And of course, one of the reasons that people are people believe that Google is doing this is because they're in a huge patent battle with Apple and with a couple of other people, the Motorola Mobility acquisition gives them 17,000 patents of their own and another 7,500 that are pending. So many people believe that the entire reason for the buyout was so that they could more readily fight the patents by threatening to counter-sue for their own patents.
There was a cute joy of attack on that with Microsoft, Apple, and RIM attacking the Google Android, and Google Android just burps out all the Motorola patents.
Yeah.
Well, what was interesting is that Google got all snippy a couple weeks ago when Apple and Microsoft ended up buying all of the Nortel patents that were up for sale in Nortel's bankruptcy. And then someone from Microsoft came out and said, well, we asked Google if they wanted to join in this conglomerate so they could own the Nortel patents too, and they said no. So they were all mad that Apple and Microsoft got the patents, but they could have gotten them too. Now they got the Motorola patents. I wonder if that's why they didn't go after the Nortel patents.
Right. It's a lot easier to buy Motorola Mobility if you don't already own a piece of Nortel.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the FCC is really going to look askance if you are part of two large
patent
makers.
Purchases and, yeah, too many sides of the same coin. Too much.
So, yeah.
Yeah, too much into cell phone wars.
And in our IRC chat at FNET, Octothorpe Soundbites, people are already trying to decide if brilliant is what David Tennant, as the doctor, used to say, yes, or it's from a beer commercial, yes. You may pick whichever one makes you happy.
Did you see the Doctor Who special last week?
I did.
And there's one this week and one next week.
I know.
Getting ready for the new series.
Can't wait. I have friends who are in England who keep wanting to tell me about it, and I refuse to listen. I also have friends who get, what is it, Showtime?
Stars.
Stars. And I won't listen to them about Torchwood either.
I sent you a link this morning. On Phil Plait's astronomy blog, he was talking about there's been an upsurge in the UK in students taking math and science because of Brian Cox.
Oh, nice.
He's a physicist. He's got these great TV shows, and he's not bad to look at. Kind of Beatlesque, they said.
Oh, there you go.
But Phil posted a podcast that he went to CERN with Brian Cox and John Barrowman. And there's video of John Barrowman running around the Large Hadron Collider at CERN.
Nice.
And so they're talking about. They're in effect creating time travel because the protons are moving so fast inside the collider. So Barrowman is saying, "Oh, so now you know I can understand more when they tell me these time travel things in my show."
But yeah, Google has bought Motorola Mobility. They didn't buy Motorola. Okay, Motorola still makes their own chips. They still make their own everything else. Yeah. All they really bought was the mobile stuff, the phones. There's a bunch of things they bought. The big one, of course, is the phones. Motorola and Google have been in bed together since the G1, the very first Google phone. That was a Motorola product, and I think we're going to see a whole lot more interesting Motorola product. The Droid, the original Droid, is a Motorola product.
Well, it's also like they announced this week that Kodak, even though you know they've been having some hard times, right now Kodak's patents that they hold in technology,
yep,
with the phones and everything else, is worth more than actually Kodak is worth.
Yeah,
and they're suing a bunch of cell phone companies, Apple and I think Motorola included, for some of the compression algorithms on the photos in digital cameras. Kodak was one of the first companies to ever release a digital camera back in the 70s.
Some, yep. Mm-hmm.
It was a shoulder backpack with a giant like 1 megabyte hard drive.
Yep. But you know what? Who knew from those beginnings?
Well, that was one of Kodak's downfalls, and I mean, they'd see something. It was just like the instant camera and say the videotapes and everything else. They came out too late on it. Say like VCR tapes and everything else. They made a good product, but it was just too late. It was good stuff, but it was, sorry, you've been left behind in the dust and trying to play catch-up, and they never really could.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of their major things. And same with the digital world, as far as getting into the cameras. I mean, granted, they've got some nice cameras, but the Japanese still kicked their butt.
Well, it used to be back when I was a kid, made in Japan meant it was a joke.
Yeah. Oh, that was, well, like China now. I mean, China is literally, you don't know what you're getting there because you could wind up with lead and everything else in it because they have no regulations.
But it was also cheap junk.
Mm-hmm.
It was a throwaway.
No,
But now, take a look at your computer. Tell me what component isn't made in Japan or China or Korea.
And that's quality, though, now.
And that's quality now.
I mean, you put some of the Japanese stuff up against these other companies, other countries, even our own, and hello, we can't even put a candle up to it.
You say a lot of it was the reconstruction after World War II, is that we had really devastated Japan. So we rebuilt them, and now they won the next war.
Yeah, but they did one thing smart though. They learned from what we taught them, and then they turn around, and just instead of being satisfied with that, they go, wait a minute, how much more can we improve on this?
Right.
And there was always constant improving it, making it better, because they were hearing the feedback, oh, made in Japan, it's cheap junk. A number of the corporate executives said that they heard that, and they paid attention to it. And that's where a lot of us, even us, we don't learn sometimes from those mistakes and keep repeating it and expect different results.
Yep, absolutely true.
But Japan didn't. They turned around and, you know, through all their technology and everything else, right now, the computer world, we are where we are because of a lot of their stuff.
Yep.
I mean, feeding stuff, you know, from your phone up to the web, you know, and all this other technology, the notepads and everything else, it's amazing.
One of the things that I found, and don't forget, you can join in on this conversation. You don't have to call with a computer question. You can call with a comment. Our number is 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. I was telling you earlier.
One other thing that they can also do is we also, again, getting into the technology. If you're out there with your cell phone and have a particular question, you can also text us. And if you text us at 585-209-9010 with a question or a comment, type it in. I've got that screen opened, and I can pull it up. That's the other cool thing. If you folks really want to see something, talk about multitasking, and I'm not trying to brag here, but I literally have 4 screens, 3 keyboards, and 3 mice.
You got an odd screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they go, wait, why 4 screens and 3 keyboards? Well, because one screen two screens are hooked up to one computer, so I can travel between, which I'm doing constantly.
Right.
And even on Thursday nights right now, because some DJs like the mice one way, I like it another way. And when you first come in trying to get it set up to do it multitasking the correct way, gets a little confusing. I've misfired a couple.
I bet you have. I bet it happens.
Getting down, well, it's a whole new thing for our listeners, you know.
And that's the beauty of radio. You can get it right next time.
Oh, yeah.
That's how it works.
I can always redo it. But, you know, you can text us your question, and we'll get that on there, too.
I got to tell you about 2 cool things I found this week. I'm sure.
Besides that thing that you've got?
Well, I got the, I have the 2 other cool things. I have the, you can see it on the camera.
Yeah, folks, got it. We should tell folks again, there's some folks, because I mentioned it, you know, that they can see us live on the web. They
go, Ustream.
And we should put out there how folks. Don't we have a link off of our webpage?
It's on our website, yeah. It's Sound.
If they go to soundbites.org.
Soundbites-radio, I think it is. Let me find it.
But if they go to soundbites.org, that's soundbites.
I don't know what it is.
You can get a link there, and you can actually see us live here in the studio if you really want to be scared.
Those of you who are watching, this is the Asus EEEPC Transformer TF-101. And it's a laptop. It's a beautiful laptop. It's light. It's nice. It's wonderful. By the way.
Oops. Oh, my God. Oh, I broke it.
It's also the Transformer Android tablet. So it's very, very cool. And what's lovely about it is there's a battery in here that lasts about 8 hours of use. There's a second battery identical to it in here. And when I link together, the battery in the keyboard recharges the battery in the tablet. It's just very, very cool. So I can use it as if it were. And the best part about it for me, this is the only keyboard for a tablet that I've seen that actually has a working mouse pad on it. So they've actually, you know, written a little sprite into it so I can actually type the, just typing in my password there. So I can actually, you know, click and drag and whatever I want to do, and I can connect to my servers at work and run Windows right through this thing using the mouse. A little problem with right-click. I'm hoping that the folks at Google can do something about that. But the rest of it works really, really nicely, and I'm very impressed by the tablet. But that wasn't the thing I was going to talk about. I found 2 neat programs this week that I'm sure the rest of you have already found. For those of you with multiple devices, and you want to make sure that all your documents are wherever you need to get them, I found a great program called Evernote. I'm sure most of you have already heard of it and seen it and played with it, but I just really paid attention to it this week. The Evernote product, you can put anything you want into it, and then that's available everywhere because there's a version for every major operating system except Linux, but you can use the web version there. The iOS, not the one from Cisco, the Android operating system, the Windows 7 operating system, there's one for BlackBerry, there's probably one for Palm. So you can put a you can put documents anywhere and get them anywhere. You can also keep your own track of, you know, you write your own documents right inside Evernote, and they'll sync up and be available everywhere. You can record meetings. That'll be available. You take pictures. They'll be available. Really, really nifty product. I'm very, very impressed by it, actually. So that was pretty cool. And I'll tell you about the other one when we come back from our break, because we're going to take a break now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you, whether you're listening on the radio, listening over the internet, listening to podcasts later in the week, watching us on YouTube, or following along on IRC. We'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Travel around the world and back. It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Before I tell you about the other really cool thing I found the other day, let's talk about some news, shall we? And don't forget, you can call us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. 30 years ago, IBM created the first personal computer running Microsoft's MS-DOS. Today, IBM and Microsoft seem to have very different views of the future of the PC. IBM Chief Executive Officer Mark Dean of the company's Middle East and African division, one of a dozen IBM engineers who designed that first machine, which was unveiled on August 12, 1981, says PCs are going the way of the vacuum tube, typewriter, vinyl records, CRT, and incandescent light bulbs. Although vinyl records, of course, are making a comeback.
Yeah, we still have tons of them here in the our library.
Well, they just produce much, much better
quality
music.
Quality sound.
Yeah. IBM sold its PC vision division to Lenovo in 2005. Dean, in a recent blog post, wrote that, "I personally have moved beyond the PC as well. My primary computer is now a tablet. When I helped design the PC, I didn't think I'd live long enough to witness its decline. But while PCs will continue to be much-used devices, they're no longer at the leading edge of computing." Dean's remarks continue a debate over whether we are now in a so-called post-PC era in which smartphones and tablets are replacing desktops and laptops. Mm. Not surprisingly, Microsoft, seller of 400 million Windows 7 licenses, isn't a fan of that term. "I prefer to think of it as the PC Plus era," Microsoft Corporate Communications VP Frank Shaw wrote in a blog post of his own. In Microsoft's vision, it's the PC Plus, being Windows Live, Windows Office, Windows Phones, Office 365, Xbox, Skype, and more. "Our software lights up Windows PCs, Windows Phones, and Xbox-connected entertainment systems, and a whole raft of other devices with embedded processors from gasoline pumps to ATMs to the latest soda vending machines, to name just a few," Shaw writes. "In some cases, we build our own hardware, Xbox, Kinect, while in most other cases, we work with hardware partners on PCs, phones, and other devices to ensnare a great end-to-end experience that optimizes the combination of hardware and software wearing a plain Republican cloth coat." Shaw notes that the
Very
Apple
good.
II... I missed that last
part. No, you
I made
did
up
that.
The last part.
You did good.
Shaw noted that the Apple II, Commodore PET, and other devices preceded the first IBM 5150 PC running MS-DOS, but says it was the IBM and Microsoft partnership that was a defining moment for our industry and fulfilled the dream of a PC on every desk in every home. The first IBM PC even predates the Macintosh and Windows, which launched in 1984 and 1985, respectively. Shaw says he still owns his first computer, the IBM Personal Portable, booting MS-DOS version 5.1. Although Microsoft's role in the daily lives of personal computer users could be diminished by the rise of iPhones, Android phones, and iPads, IBM's Dean said it is not simply a new type of device that is replacing the PC as the center of computing. Do you find yourself turning to your PC less often while you use your mobile device more often? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
Of course, Apple famously took out a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal welcoming IBM to the market that they and Commodore and everyone else had been growing for the past 5 years.
Where's the welcome Android, seriously?
Yeah.
The thing of it is, though, is I still think what's going to be of the future is just what you have in front of you. I mean, for folks, even in the business world, you know, more and more cloud computing. One, to be able to have a computer that has a full-size keyboard, which is still essential for folks, you know, in a working environment to be able to, you know, still type stuff and, you know, have that. But yet to be able to grab that tablet, boom, grab it and take it off, go to a meeting, take some notes, come back, dock it. I mean, that's got, what, 9 hours battery life?
Yep.
9 hours battery life. So you turn around, come back from your meeting, you drop it in there, you're back to your full, you know, even to, probably hook it up to a full-size screen.
Yep.
You know, and
well, and that's just
which the HDMI connection, you could have a full-screen keyboard and everything else, but yet you've got the portability and best of both worlds.
Yep, I could take it to any meeting. I can then take my notes in Evernote, and they're already on the web when I'm done, so that they're available there. I can do audio recordings. They're available. I can hook it to the screen and show stuff. I can show, I've got Polaris Office on this Asus so that I can do Word and PowerPoint and Excel, so I can show PowerPoint slides if I want to. I don't have to lug a huge thing around.
The best of both worlds.
And like you said, I got an 8-9 hour battery in here. If I hook it into the keyboard and take that with me, I got another 8-9 hours, and it just is the device more people are turning to. If I'm going to be sitting somewhere doing something, it's a lot easier to carry a tablet around than it is to carry a laptop, even a netbook or a notebook, because there are things you can do on a tablet, the apps that are available. You know, you want to play a game. It's a lot easier to play a game on a tablet, and there's a plethora of games available on the tablet than it is to do it on a netbook, even on a Chromebook.
I was at this restaurant just down the street from me, and I'm sitting there having dinner. And, you know, it's just around 6 o'clock or going on that. And this one person, table over across from me, kitty corner, husband and wife come in, and they take their little pad, open it up, set it up because they had it in this holder. They could set it up. They quick connect to the internet, and they're watching Channel 13 News.
Yep.
Because they wanted to catch something, so they had it down. So, but yet, I'm looking over there, and they're both kind of looking at it, trying to, and we're all watching TV right there in the restaurant.
Yep. I was out somewhere doing something when one of my guys called me and said, I got a question. And he called me on Google Talk. So we were looking at each other. You know, it was Google Talk is like Skype, only it's from Google.
Yep.
And he called me on Google Talk. We were chit-chatting. I was looking at him. He was looking at me, and I was just on the tablet. It was great. It was easy and convenient, and it was a lot easier to do than it would have been if I'd set up a laptop and then hunkered down so that I was, you know, in the view of the camera and everything else. It's certainly doable in any circumstance, but with the tablet, it's ridiculously easy.
Mm-hmm. We're all waiting for the ubiquity of, you know, the Star Trek pads. You know, you have pads, all your data's on it. You got this massive computer that just records everything and knows everything, stored everything. Speech dictation that works perfectly fine, even though the guy in the next to you might say erase hard drive.
That was the original Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
It even put in punctuation correctly.
Yep. Fleeing the Cylon tyranny.
Exactly. But really, the big thing that I am missing from this is transcription, voice dictation to text. Yeah. And that just takes so much processing power. Mm-hmm. I really do get it.
Give it time.
It's getting interesting that Nuance and their Dragon Dictate and Actually Speaking. for you know, a couple hundred dollars. It works on a regular desktop computer because we finally caught up to the power needed. They actually have a neat iPhone app. They may have an Android app, too. It records the audio waveform on your phone and then sends it to the Nuance servers.
I was just about to say that.
Does all the recognition at their end and then sends you back the text. But it takes you know a second,
mm-hmm.
so it's on a, especially on a phone, it's a really quick way to send an email without you know working with that tiny tiny keyboard.
Yep.
And it's free, which is even better.
Oh, that's now I got to look it up. I'll look it up at the next thing and see if I can put it on my tablet here and on my phone. And that's the other beauty is that it's and this is what Apple has found out. They, you know, Apple, I've argued this before, Apple's no longer a computer company because they don't make most of their money from computers
yeah.
anymore. They're up until the iPad, they were really a music device company, an MP3 player company. Now they're an MP3 player and tablet company. But what they've really created is an ecosystem. You know, you can start from the Nano and go all the way up to, well, now it's the Mac Mini server because the X server is gone.
Or the Mac Pro server.
Well, you're right. There's a Mac Pro server. And in every conceivable area in between, you can find something to use that talks to everything else.
Yep.
It's not quite on the Evernote level where you can do the same thing on everything, but it all works together. And I think that's what Google is trying to do. I think Google is trying to build that same kind of ecosystem from the phone to the tablet to the Chromebook to online.
Yep.
One of our folks did text me from Orchard Park, and it says, tablet supplement a desktop? ? Let me know when there is a tablet have a 6 cores, 8 gigabytes of RAM and 2 terabytes of storage.
Well, that's
okay,
why.
Okay, that's first. That's not your average desktop. Secondly,
no.
You need to look up the term supplement. Supplement does not mean replace. It means an add-on to.
Yeah.
It's not replacing your desktop. It's supplementing your desktop.
Yeah, it used to be.
I refer you to Webster's.
Yeah, you bought a big, powerful desktop, and then you got a laptop to carry with you. And, you know, in the olden days, you know, 10 years ago, the laptops were way underpowered compared to your desktops, but they were portable. Now we're seeing with laptops with the i5 and i7 processors, netbooks now with dual core in them, they're getting so much faster now. We are seeing laptops replacing desktops.
Yeah.
Laptops are outselling desktops 2-to-1 in the general marketplace because they have the power and the portability. But desktops are still even more powerful. So what we're seeing a lot of people do is you get that one giant desktop in your house, and then other people have laptops or tablets and iPads because they do 90% of what 90% of the people need. You know, the one of the shows I listen to, they talk about this 90-90 rule. The vast majority of regular people want to get their email and want to browse the web and maybe play some games and maybe read some books. And tablets do that for
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah.
You know, $200, $300, $400, $500, depending on how much you want to spend.
Let's put it back into perspective.
And then you get home, plug it into your main computer, and then you can do the video editing, and you can do the audio editing, and you can do the CAD work. And,
all right, 20 right. years ago, when we just, you know, started getting into this. Hello, we were talking, folks, just to take you back, rewind here a little bit, because we are coming up on 22 years, in a matter of fact, 2 weeks. Labor Day weekend, we will start our 22nd year. But rewinding.
You're old.
Yeah, I know. And we haven't been to divorce court yet.
You wait.
Well, my ex-wife would agree with that one. Anyways, we've been together, though, 21 years. And if you rewind back to 20 years ago, we were talking about 286s, dual floppy drives. Now, in 20 years,
folks, remember that second floppy drive and you didn't have to swap your floppies all the time?
We got so excited at that first hard card.
Yep.
Yes.
10 whole megabytes in a hard card that you plugged into one of the slots in the IBM PC so you didn't even have to remove one of your two floppies.
Yes. And you were so excited. You know, everybody was so excited. Oh, this is all the power I'm going to need. And, oh, wait a minute, folks. Here's the other thing. there was no GUI. And what I mean by no GUI is when you look at Windows, you're working with GUI. We're talking about back in the day when there was just text on a monochrome screen. If you were lucky, you went up to EGA.
Right.
EGA.
The Hercules card.
And that got you some color. So instead of seeing orange text or green text on a black screen, all of a sudden you could switch, have blue background with white lettering or green lettering or whatever.
16 colors and high resolution 320 by 200.
And everything was dial-up.
Which is more than your phone has. Or your phone has more now than the original PCs. Yeah.
And the dial-up, when you got there, again, it was not the GUI interface that you see. 300
baud, had to put your phone in the little suction cups.
Oh, have you seen, there's a commercial, and I don't know what it's for, but it's about a woman who found babysitters who are robots.
Oh, yeah, I love
and
that.
And one of the robots is reading to the kids, and the sound is a modem connecting. I laugh every time I see that commercial. I really do. It's just very funny. But, yeah, we're at the point now where the average user, and that's not the person who listens to this show, but the average user can get along 90% of the time with just the tablet. That's how that works. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got a couple of minutes, and we're going to talk to Lynn from Clymer, New York.
Yep.
Lynn,
yeah.
Are you there? What's your question, Lynn?
Well, number one, when you're checking power supply, should you check the voltage under load or open source?
Both.
Yes, both.
Okay, I thought that made sense, but you go on the web, and they're more apt to tell you to check it open, and that makes no sense to me with my...
Well, the problem is that computers don't have a mechanical power switch. It's an electronic power switch. So the power supply has to put out a trickle voltage, which is usually 5, maybe 12 volts.
Yep.
And then circuitry on the computer tells the power supply to push power to the rest of the pins to power up the computer. So it's that trickle power. You have to find out which pin on the power supply that is, to see if the power supply is even starting to put out any power at all.
Well, I know that that's the case, but I got one that the hard drive is acting flaky, like the IED controller is going bad or the power supply, and I thought, well, the place starts power supply, but...
Try a different tap on the power supply. Sometimes one of the connectors is loose. I see that a lot on the 4-pin white Molex connectors. Mm-hmm. If you unplug and unplug them a lot, sometimes the pins will push back up inside the connector and don't make contact anymore.
Yeah, they're really not designed for plug and unplug.
Yeah.
What's that?
They're really not designed for plug and unplug. They're really designed to be plugged in and left forever.
Yeah.
Molex is not the strongest connector on the market.
Yep, I understand.
But, yeah, I agree with these guys. Check it under both, because if the power supply is going, it may not go when there's no load on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it may be fine when there's no load.
And probably if it's been on for a while and warmed up, probably is a good idea. Not absolutely essential, but a good idea.
Well, you want to try it with both. Because,
yes, both. Yes.
It could be that the problem is when it's cold, or it could be the problem is when it's hot. And that's the problem with electronic circuits. You don't know until you've tested them.
Right. And my second question is there a good software tester for IED controller?
Software tester for IED. Well, there's SpinRite that will test the hard drive itself, either IDE or SATA.
Yeah, I've got one, but it's one that it's a commercial one that I pay for.
It's not software.
It's software,
is it? It's hardware.
Or hardware?
It's software.
Ah.
That tests the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Goes through a battery, a test, and I can set it up to do the processors, the memory, the video, the motherboard, everything on the motherboard, the video, the keyboard, the mouse, the whole
nine. You paid some good money for that.
Yes, I did.
I could see that. Well, I think that's... Oh, I do have one other question, seeing you don't seem to be getting a boatload of calls. What would be a good book for an old guy to use? I'm visually impaired, so reading is difficult. Not impossible, but very difficult. So I'm thinking about a Kindle. As I understand it, at least some of the models have an audio reader on, text to voice.
That depends on the publisher of the book. A lot of book publishers will not let the Kindle read a textbook because you're supposed to buy the audiobook instead.
Do you use JAWS?
No.
Jaws is a very... if you're losing, you might want to check...
I kind of wanted this on an independent device. That's why I was thinking about the Kindle.
Okay, yeah.
What's nice about the Kindle is it's very contrasty. So it's very black text and a very white background.
And you can make the letters larger, too.
You can make the letters larger. As to whether you can make them large enough, I don't know. That's obviously an individual problem.
Certainly.
And so you'll need to check that out.
But what good books might there be that I might want to look at to... Because there's no use in me buying a half a dozen books and finding out, I can use the reader on them, but they just aren't worth a hoot.
Well, everything is available. I mean, if you go to Amazon, 90% of their books are available on a Kindle.
Okay.
If you go to Barnes & Noble, 90% of their new books, in both cases,
but
new
books. But I'm referring to manuals on computers. That's what I'm primarily interested in.
Oh, that's a good question. I haven't looked into that myself yet, although I have a Nook Color. I haven't really looked into that yet. That's a lovely question.
Well, I'm glad you think so. Great minds think alike.
They do, but we have to take a break now.
Well, thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
I will look into that. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 42 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Me.
To get ready?
I did not understand.
We need a different sign for get ready and start.
Get ready and start. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
How long have we been doing this?
Too long.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm at 40 minutes, six,
We're here. You're new at this, getting used to the board and, me pointing at you. And
we get to do it again next week. Maybe we'll get it right then.
We've only been doing this part for over two years.
It's only 2 years, that's why. Yeah, it's not ingrained yet.
Yeah.
Microsoft has begun talking about Windows 8 in general terms. I got to tell you a story before we get to the news.
Then I got to do one for you, too.
We were talking about this just last night. We were talking about memorizing and learning and all that other stuff. Back in the day, back in the 70s,
You remember them?
I remember some of the 70s. I was doing an off-Broadway show, and the two leads were also the two leads on General Hospital at the time. They've been doing that for like 25 years. So we come in for our first read-through. We go home. They come in the next day. They've got Act One memorized already. And we're all like, show-offs. They said, no, you don't understand. This is what we do. We memorize an entire script every day.
Every day is a new script.
You know? So we're memorizing. Now, it's not a half-hour monologue. There's a lot, there seems maybe there's 10 minutes. But they memorize them immediately when they get home, and then they rehearse in their heads all night, and they rehearse a little bit the next day, and then they do it. They've got to be able to do that. And they were, I was just talking about the fact that I have to pound, and people who've performed with me know that I often don't ever pound my lines into my brain, but I have to work hard to memorize lines. I can ad-lib all day long, as many of my friends know, and sometimes not so well. But I can't, memorizing is painful for me. It's hard for me to do. So, that was just going back to memorizing what we've been doing for the last 22 years.
And to continue with our previous caller, there's several different series of books. There's the Dummies book in the yellow cover. There's the Beginner's Guide books in the orange covers. They have different topics on different things. We were just looking at computers for seniors. iPad, you know, for dummies, computers for... So we were joking. We found computers for seniors, and I found laptops for seniors. Oh, then there's going to be a tablets for seniors. Yep, already there.
Already there. iPad for seniors, I'm sure, is there.
And a lot of times people look at certain authors. I know David Pogue is very popular. Maria Langer is very popular. So a lot of times you'll find an author you like from one book, and then you start getting their other books. You know, but just like regular fiction.
Right, but it also depends on what you mean by technical books.
Yeah.
If you're looking for coding books, for example, to learn Python or something...
O'Reilly.
But they're saying that they don't look that good on the Kindle because sometimes the code, which is always in a different font, doesn't look that good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And doesn't blow up well.
You need a Kindle DX that does better with PDFs.
Right, and then you use PDFs, and that works. The same with, for example, diagrams. If you're reading technical books, for example, on electrical diagrams, that also doesn't
translate
terrifically well on a Kindle DX. On the other hand, though, the reality is that you can get a Kindle app for your phone, which is probably way too small to read, but also for an iPad or an Android tablet, which you can get in up to 10 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, I don't know if there's a Kindle app. Now, that's an interesting question. If there's a Kindle app for Chrome, where you could put it on your giant...
There's a web app now. Amazon released a web app to get around Apple's 30% rule.
Oh, I bet they would.
Yeah. Well, was it Apple? Well, the irony there is Apple, when Apple opened their store, they take a 30% cut of things sold through their store. And Amazon said, oh, that's outrageous, because we take 70%. They had to lower their cut to 30%.
Who did?
Amazon. Typical book sales, Amazon takes 70%, and the author, publisher gets 30%. So they were mad because they had to lower their cut to 30 to match Apple. But then Google came out and...
At 5%.
At 5%, yeah. But that's the nice thing about the tablets is you can get the Amazon store, you can get the Nook store, you can get the Google store. Apple has their iBook store, too, on the iPad. So you get a Kindle, and you pretty much can only read from the Kindle store. You get one of the generic tablets, you can read books from any of the stores.
Right.
I want to go back for a minute to that gentleman. You know, he was talking about power supplies and all that.
Oh, yeah.
I got to tell you about a story this week.
Here we go. Here we go.
You know Sam. She is a sweetie.
She is.
And she is.
We all love Sam.
And for you folks that don't know, Sam is short for Samantha, and she is the office manager. She more or less controls both mine and Dan's life. It's like having a second wife. And Dan's just got a first one. So anyways, Dan and I had to go out on a service call because we were dropping in a server. And we're expecting a machine to come in. She goes, oh, no problem. I know how to do this. I can quick hook it up and check it out. And all right, we're on our way. We're setting up the server, and we get a call. And she is literally terrified. Oh, Jesus. I just blew up a machine. I had a fire. I just got about sparks and blah, blah. And she is totally terrorized. Sam, what happened? Well, I went to plug this thing in, plugged it in, got it going, went to unplug it, and then all of a sudden I get all these sparks, and my face was right near it, just about threw me across to the back room. And all right, don't worry. Don't worry, stuff like this happens. Welcome to the real world. Yep. We've been now initiated.
That's why there's fire extinguishers next to the service desk.
That's right.
She didn't know. She had never really paid attention. She goes, where's the fire extinguishers when we got there? I'm looking at the bench, and I literally turned 180 degrees, and I go, one down there, one up there, and oh, there's another one on the stairway. Yep. In case you're coming down and there's a fire, you can quick grab one. She goes, I never noticed those. What had happened was, evidently the client, when he was trying to get the plug out, all right, there's two little screws that hold that plastic housing for this where you plug it in into the power supply.
Yeah.
They had broken. So when she went to pull the power plug out, it pulled the whole plug out.
Nice.
Those connectors on the back, if you were to pull that plug out, normally in the day they used to be shielded, wrapped.
Yeah, not anymore. That costs another 0.8 cents.
Yeah. They're now bare. So when she was pulling it out, that plug came out with it. And made contact.
Sure.
It blew the power supply. And she goes,
which saved the rest of the computer.
Yes, the rest of the computer. We were put another power supply in there, and everything was booted up, and that's a fine. You know, that's a nice thing about the power supply. It had the fuse in there. The minute it sparked, it popped it. It parked, you know, blew it. No good. No problem. Replace the power. But, boy, now when she's going to plug one in or plug it in, her arm is extended.
Yeah. Yeah. If I could get elastic, man, she'd be 70 feet.
If
back.
I could get a robotic arm.
You turn, you hook a switch to all the plugs on your bench, so then you can be across the room and flip the switch on. Then
yeah,
see
right,
what happens
right, right,
over
right.
on the other side. I used to do that in shop all the time.
That's not a bad idea.
See, the thing of it is, though, is I can talk about her right now because she's not around.
Yeah, right, right. You better hope she's not listening or doesn't podcast this.
No, no, I'm safe.
You come in like Wednesday and get a 2x4 upside the head, you'll know she podcasts on Tuesday.
Oops. But no, she is a sweetie, and you know, we love.
Of course, if you just bought a server from Dave, you know. It's been tested thoroughly.
Right. No, they were out doing the server.
No, we were out doing the server, and she was. A client wanted us to just quick check something.
I hate those just quick checks.
So, yeah, well, it was.
And they never want to pay for it.
And, the guy goes, after we told him, you know, the power supply, he goes, yeah, it did kind of come out hard.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah. Well, it's right up there with a laptop. I had another laptop. And this was 2 weeks ago. And I was hooking it up. I got it all hooked up. I turned it on. And I went to grab... Because, you know, the cord and that brick was in the way. So I went to grab it and put it behind, and I got zapped.
Mm-hmm.
Turned out this guy's rabbit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Loved to chew on the cord. And once I looked at it, it's like this thing is just literally all taped together and everything else. And it's like, whoa, no, I unplugged it. Heck no. And I undid it. And he wanted me to repair the cord again. I go, no. I said, this thing has been damaged too much. You know, it's the wires
spend
are...
Spend $5 on the new cord.
It was like, holy man. Well, yeah, but you're going to kill yourself. You go and grab... Well, I'm careful. I just...
No, you
I wish you had let us know because, you know, we went and grabbed it. I went and grabbed it and just about got set back on my butt. Because I don't pay attention to that type of stuff. I just grab the cord. And you've
had heart problems.
Yeah, right. Oh, that got my heart going.
Yeah, I bet it did. That's one of the real problems with these machines. We're around them so much, we lose respect for them.
Yep.
You know? I mean, I've seen people open up their laptops or their desktops and stick their hands in them.
Mm-hmm.
There's capacitors in there, folks, with thousands of volts in there. Well, yeah, hundreds of volts anyway. They'll give you a bit of a zap there. And so you should be a little more careful than that. So, yeah, I think there's really people are not paying enough attention.
Well, that's the thing. You know, and folks get in there, and it's very obvious that they've been in there playing. Especially when you sit there and, oh, no, I didn't touch anything. And you open up the case, and there's the processor fan and the housing for it dangling on the power cord.
Or there's, yeah.
In other words,
missing.
There's a little three-wire power connector that hooks to the motherboard that runs the fan. Well, when that whole housing is literally just, oh, dangling, you know, swinging back and forth because, oh, you were trying to evidently check something else out. And didn't know what the heck you were doing. You broke the harness or the actual clip that holds
the
down.
Yep.
And now it's not being held on, and you're wondering why it's shutting down and protecting itself.
Right.
Damn thing isn't working right. It only comes on for about 10 minutes and then shuts off. What the heck's going on? Well, you were in there playing. Oh, no, 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 no. Yeah.
We have to start saying somebody was in your computer.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Well, there's no one else in my house.
Okay, then.
Somebody was in your computer.
We know who that somebody is. Then. Oh, thanks.
What is it?
Maybe my grandson came over and tried something.
Yeah, that must be it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right up there. You know, but yeah, folks, you know, it just, and I think Steve will agree with me on this too, it would just save so much time and effort if you would just be upfront with us.
They're scared to tell you. We run into issues, too, because of we handle warranty claims for Apple, and accidental abuse. They call it accidental abuse. I've always wondered about intentional abuse.
You're right.
Beat it with a baseball bat?
Right. It's not covered by warranty. So if you spill something in your computer, that's not a warranty issue. That's an insurance issue. But they don't want to tell us that because they want us to fix it under warranty. And then you open it up and you realize that the kid got drunk and puked in it and hid it in a closet for 6 months.
We had a faculty member bring a laptop back. We pulled out the second battery and milk came out. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. We're going to have news. We're going to have hopefully more of your questions. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. You can text us. You can catch us on Ustream. You can catch us on the IRC chat at FNET and Octothorpe Soundbites. We're just everywhere it's possible to be, on the web and on radio and on Ustream. We're just...
We're everywhere.
Media whores is really what we are. So we're going to take a break, but we'll be back shortly with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're Soundbites, right here on member-supported. Say it with me. Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Really? Is
yep.
It my turn now?
You
really?
Can. Yeah, I'll let you.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we got that right.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You know, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. We'll take calls from anybody, anywhere. That's why we have the 800 number. So you can give us a call, and we will be more than happy, if not actually glad, to talk to you. And we're just waiting for Dave, who is giving us Jim from Syracuse. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Howdy, duty.
Hello, Mr. Bluster.
Brother heavy duty. Anyhow, my question is, with Thunderbird, for some reason, and I got no idea why, which is why I'm calling you, I even tried incantations and it didn't work. I can't add any email addresses to the address book. I plug them in. It says, okay, great. As soon as I close the email browser, bring it back up again, they're not there.
Huh. Now, you've...
I even went so far as to uninstall Thunderbird and reinstall it.
Yeah. Now, when you do that, when you add a thing, if you go back in the same session and look at it, is it there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as long as I don't close Thunderbird, everything's cool.
Permission error on the address book file?
That's the only
Not
thing,
even a guess.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, because it just started up all of a sudden when I got the update for the latest one that came this past week, the one prior to that, it started doing it then. And I just got to the point where I switched over to Windows Live Mail. You know, just because I want to be able to add, you know, the addresses.
Now, when you used, when you uninstalled Thunderbird,
yeah.
Did you use Revo?
Yes, I did.
Good, good.
All right, listen, let's try this. What you
get
might want what get a big hammer. Stand
bigger
back.
One.
What you want, make sure it's a not an electrically conductive hammer and or unplug the computer.
Oh darn.
Yeah, right. What you want to do, what we're gonna try to do is transferring the address book out.
Did that?
Oh, you did that already?
Yep.
And it did it okay?
It says it did. And then when I get rid of my old one and load the old one back in, same situation.
I would say export your addresses out into a CSV file or something like that, and then delete your address book file. There's abook.mab and history.mab in your Thunderbird profile.
Okay.
Relaunch Thunderbird. It will make new empty addresses.
Okay.
And then import them back.
Oh, that's good.
Because it sounds like there's something wrong with your address book file, that it can't write the data to it.
Not only that, ones that I deleted
are back.
Yeah, clearly what it thinks is the address book is locked and or you don't have access to it. You don't have rights to it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do what Steve says and export all your addresses and physically, you know, shut down Thunderbird, physically delete the address.mab and history.mab files. Start Thunderbird again. It'll say, oh, yeah, they're missing. I'll recreate them. It recreates them. Then import your addresses again. Now you should again be the owner, and it should work. What it sounds like happened is you had them open at some point when you had a crash or an odd shutdown of some sort. And
you didn't have a rootkit error.
Once in a while it happens. I know it's never happened to you.
I know, especially when I was running monkey excrement.
There you go. So, yeah, give that a try and let us know what happened.
You didn't have any rootkit errors or rootkit
Not that
bugs.
I know. I mean, I went so far as to go with ESET NAT32 for virus and malware protection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been doing really good for me. It's kind of pricey, but, you know, it beats having to reinstall things two or three times a year.
Yeah.
There you go.
So
it's saving you there.
Yeah, I don't believe I had any rootkits. I scanned for them just to make sure.
There's okay, a new
and
Microsoft
rootkit
program. Everything
seems to come up clean.
Okay, good.
So, and I do the Tango once a month.
Yeah, it's just,
which means I do it on my knees.
Exactly. But what I believe has likely happened is that at some point there was just a glitch, and either Windows thinks the file is locked or thinks you don't have right permissions.
Right.
Okay.
You could solve this.
I thought, but I wasn't sure what to do about it.
You could solve this possibly by simply right-clicking on the address.mab and the history.mab files, opening properties, going to the last tab, which I forget what the name of that is.
Yeah.
And
that would be way too simple.
Yeah.
Advanced, maybe,
whatever it is. And on there, it lets you set the permissions, but if it already thinks you're not the owner, you won't.
Yeah, delete it would be the cleanest. Just do like Steve said, delete those two files, you know, and be done with
after you shut down Thunderbird.
Yeah, back up your addresses so you have copies of them.
Right.
In multiple places.
Yes. I know the feeling. Okay, but the MAB files would be in the main Mozilla Thunderbird folder?
No, they're under your profile, which is usually a random character set.
Great.
I've posted a link on our link list for
it. Okay, cool. All right, I'll
and you listed the files to get rid of for them, too?
And, you know, worst comes to worst, I'll just keep using Windows Live Messenger.
Ooh.
Yeah, well,
that would be worse.
I can't seem to find anybody else's email anywhere.
There's also a new
Gmail.
I don't like Google. Yeah.
There's
too Snoopy.
Microsoft has a new rootkit remover they've put out called System Sweeper. It's currently a public beta. So there's the malicious software removal tool that gets updated every month that removes known malware. And now they've got the Security Essentials, which is their antivirus tool. So now they've also released a rootkit tool.
Okay.
So they're sort of covering all the bases now.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll give it a try, see what happens.
Let us know.
All right, we'll do.
Thanks, Jim.
Have a great day. Just don't get caught at it.
You got it.
Okie doke.
Yeah, that's one other thing. Super Anti-Spyware came out with a new version, too. They've got a whole new look to their screen, and it's pretty cool. And again, I encourage folks, you know, we offer the free stuff, and folks go, how good can it be? Well, it's pretty good.
Or we wouldn't recommend it.
Exactly. You know, I've tested it, and if it breaks, you know, I won't recommend it unless, you know, I've tested it and made sure that it's not going to mess up any of my machines, because we've got machine. That's just literally what I do, is I literally play with it on a machine and make sure it's going to do what I want before I even recommend it. And Super Nice Spyware does have some other features in it that it's worth checking out, and for the nominal fee, you know, buy it. Yeah, you know, folks say, well, I get this paid for it. That's okay. we're just recommending this stuff. It'll do an adequate job. Is it going to be 100%? No, nothing is 100% because here's the story, folks. It's like the game of leapfrog. These programs that we recommend will go ahead and get rid of the stuff in that for right now. But then these guys are always trying to find a way around that. And they do. So, you know, it's the game of leapfrog. We jump over them, update the stuff, you're clean for a little bit. They find other things to get into your machine and mess stuff up. So they jump ahead. So it's a constant battle. And that's the way it's going to be. And even the Mac folks are starting to see this now, too. That they can't sit there like they used to and say, well, we never get any of this. No, they're starting to get nailed, too. Not as much as the PC, I'll grant you that.
Yet.
Yep. Yeah, but they are starting to get exploited.
Yep.
Adobe has had some repetitive issues with the Acrobat Reader and the Flash Player. That
repetitive, like daily, they're updating it.
It's
Fox it.
What some of the security people think is that the bad guys have a whole pile of exploits they've found, and as soon as Adobe fixes one, they just start using the next one, yep. And then the next one, then the next one.
Fox it.
Yeah, don't use Adobe Reader. Use some of the other readers. Fox it
is great.
For Windows, Apple Preview on the Mac. Try not to avoid avoid Flash. In fact, a lot of times, if you remove the Flash Player from your computer, from your browser, websites will give you the H.264, the newer video standard, because the iPad and the iPhone don't have Flash in it at all. Except there's some third party programs you can buy to do Flash. Most websites have been putting alternatives to Flash, and it's usually H.264 or WebM is the Google video standard. And so by not having Flash at all, it loads the alternate formats, and then your battery life is much better and your processor is much better because Flash is such a resource hog.
But see, this is where I think Macs are going to come under more attack is with the iPads. You know, there are more and more folks that are starting to get them, and that's a bigger...
And more importantly, there are a lot of really arrogant Mac people out there. Not all of you, but there are a lot of people. You see them in the forums all the time. I own a Mac. I never get viruses. I don't need to load any antivirus software because I got a Mac. Well, you're in trouble. Good for you. Whatever works for you. But the reality is that you're no better than anybody else, and you can get viruses just as much as anybody else. All right, our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit. Welcome, Rich. What's your question?
Actually, two separate questions. I have an old desktop PC that I'm looking to sell, and I wanted to know maybe the best way to get rid of, other than just taking away the whole operating system and everything from the computer, to be able to sell it to someone, to another family member.
DBAN. DBAN.org, Derek's Boot and Nuke.
Okay.
It's a, you download from that website a CD, burn the CD, and boot it. And what it does is there's different levels. Take the highest level you're comfortable with. The higher the better, but the longer it takes. And it will wipe all the data out of those hard drives. I mean, they are gone, gone, gone.
Now, does this take the operating system away, too?
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you okay.
And then you reload the operating system.
I was going to kind of give them the operating system with it.
Well, you reload from the original disk.
It's an old XP machine, so...
Right, and so doesn't count. It's still, you still have to worry about the legality of that, but...
Okay.
You can reload the operating system because the reality is if you give it to them without doing Derek's Boot and Nuke, there will be stuff in the registry that they could go in and see that might, in fact, be private data of yours. There's simply no way around that.
The information you don't want to share.
And then there's the profile, which has even more personal information in it. And there are lots of tools for getting into the profile. So really your best bet is to use Derek's Boot and Nuke and then reload the operating system. It's the only way to assure that you don't get you don't leave personal data on that machine when you give it to someone else.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. And if I can, now my second question.
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. Looking for a netbook, what do you suggest? heard you talking earlier about, I believe, a machine that you said you had.
I have a Lenovo.
He has two of them right in front of him.
I have two of them right in front of him right now, but only one is a netbook. And that's the Lenovo.
That's what I'm kind of looking for, a netbook that might do, I don't know if this is possible or not, but like to do a little bit of Office.
You can do all of Office.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of Windows on netbooks. But if you get a netbook with 2 gigs of RAM, you'll have a slow but usable experience.
Okay.
So if you wanted to do that, you could get a Lenovo S. I have a Lenovo S10. The Lenovo line is very nice. I haven't seen a bad one yet. They're very high quality. They're the old IBM line. Mm-hmm. There's a company in China that bought them, and they're the same quality that the IBMs used to be. So very, very nice. I've been very pleased with mine. There are a number of others that are good. Your best bet, though, is to go look at them and play with the keyboards a little bit, because you will find that the keyboards are different on each model. On the S10, which I have, the right shift key is in a very weird place, so I have to be a little careful when I type. But there are others which have a more full-size keyboard because they have a slightly larger screen than mine.
So I have looked at some of the ASUS ones at Best Buy.
Yep. ASUS makes excellent products as well. I don't own one, but I've heard nothing but good about them. And I do have an ASUS tablet, the EEE Pad Transformer TF-101. And I really am impressed with the product. ASUS has been around forever, although mostly they made OEM products for
That's what I've got is the EEE. I love it.
Yeah.
I bring it here to the studio when I'm doing my show on Thursday nights.
Dave has the EEE.
I'm running Office, I'm running Excel and Word, and then I got another program. You know, like you say, it's not a powerhouse, but for what I need here in the studio,
right? You do have to be a little more patient because it only will. The max is 2 gigs of RAM. The max is, you know, it's got a smaller, slower hard drive, so you got to be a little more patient.
Well, if you want to run the Linux versions of the netbooks and then run OpenOffice on it, you can still do all of your Office-type documents and read the Microsoft Office suite, but usually get more performance out of it.
Linux runs much faster than Windows on this laptop. But you can also load off OpenOffice on Windows, and it's a free Office suite. Before you go spending the money for Office, try it. It's free. If you don't like it, then go buy Office. But you know, for 90%, it's that 90 rule, right? The 90-10 rule. Ninety percent of the people only use 10% of the power of the
that's
product.
That's true.
Anyway.
For as much as I have it, as much as I use it, you're right. I say I'm going to use it, and then don't use all of it.
Right. So if in fact you find that you're not a power user, it certainly doesn't hurt to try before you spend the money on Office. I'm not saying don't buy it. But do yourself a favor, try OpenOffice. If it works for you, you win.
Right.
Make sense?
Makes sense. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good advice.
Thank you. All right. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
We are going to take a break because that was just, apparently enervating. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Back with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we've got Dennis on the line from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's your question?
Hi. I'm sure you've had people ask you this question plenty of times, but I probably heard it and forgot it. I've got a Windows 7 desktop, and it has Microsoft Office 2007, a trial version.
Mm-hmm.
I did the uninstall because I don't want it, but I keep getting the updates, the Windows updates, wanting to put these things in. Is there any way anything I can do about that?
When you uninstalled it, did you also uninstall the uninstaller? Because there's, in other words, our updater. There's also a Microsoft updater, Office updater, that it puts in there, too.
I didn't. I must have, because I just looked before I talked to you guys, and I didn't see anything else about an updater or anything else.
Check in your scheduled task. In the control panel, if you're running Windows XP?
No, it's Windows 7.
All right, Windows 7.
It probably left some registry keys, so the computer thinks it's still there. You may have to
check the scheduled tasks, too. There's scheduled tasks.
Well, the Windows update and Microsoft update have sort of merged so that the general Windows update will also update any installed Microsoft commercial programs like Office. So it thinks you still have it installed, so it didn't completely uninstall it properly, which is a very common issue with Windows uninstallers.
Well,
that's why we recommend Revo.
It's kind of too late for Revo, right?
Tell you what.
It can clean up some of the mess that's left behind. It's the first thing to try.
Thing that is if you still have the icon on your desktop or on your machine for the trial version, try reinstalling it and then use Revo to uninstall it.
There's also a couple of things you should do before you go to that. There are related Office applications you may not have removed. Look for Activation Assistant, any of the proofing tools, the Office Live add-in, the Outlook connector, the compatibility pack. There's a knowledge base entry, KB290301. Steve's going to put up a link on that one. And it talks about how to uninstall all the pieces and parts. It's not...
I've already been there.
You've already been there.
So it's probably already in our link list. Let's go find it.
Yeah, exactly. But basically, it talks about... how to resolve the problem for Windows 7. Talks about how to uninstall things by hand because they're admitting that just using add remove programs doesn't really work.
Well, I've been saying that right along because all it does is turn off one bit.
There's actually, if you scroll down far enough, there's a fix it button. And it says Office 2007 Suites to uninstall automatically, click Fix This Problem button or link, and there's a Microsoft Fix It.
Are you talking about when I'm at the knowledge base thing?
Yes.
Okay.
The link that Steve's going to put up, I know nobody scrolls anymore. You need to scroll down. Most of the way down the page, there's a section that's called...
There's a video, too.
There's a video. There's a section called Uninstall the Microsoft Office Suite Using an Alternate Method, and one of the choices is there's a series of Fix It buttons. Make sure you've got the right suite. There's a fix-it button for Office 2003, Office 2007, and Office 2010.
That almost looks like an ad for something. I would have skipped right over that.
Yeah.
The way the button looks.
Yep.
So for 2003, 2007, 2010. So apparently earlier versions didn't have this problem? They're not bothering
with
them.
They're not bothering with them anymore is the way that works. But so scroll down far enough to find the fix-it buttons. Make sure you have the right one for your version of Office and go for it.
This is formerly the Windows Installer Cleanup Utility. That's why I've been there before, because we've talked about that.
Yeah.
Because Windows doesn't uninstall things properly, so they had this cleanup utility that they used to publish.
Instead of slapping their programmers, the Gibbs slap we were talking about earlier in the IRC chat.
Yep, April 2008, we talked about that.
Yep. rather than Gibbs slapping the programmers, they had other programmers create a fix for the first programmers. Brilliant!
Okay, so I'm going to go to your links, the stuff that you linked for today's show, and that's where I'll find that link for that kind of...
For the Microsoft Knowledge Base article on uninstalling Office, yes.
Okay, it's there now.
Great. All right, thank you.
Sure.
Bye.
That's
at least he realized it was a trial, because a lot of times people get new computers and it comes with these trials, and then they don't realize it's a trial, and when it quits working, they can't get to their documents anymore.
Right.
And what was that? Dave had a story where somebody's trial expired while it was in the shop, and they were mad at you?
They got all shape. They go, well, turn it back on. I didn't have it. It doesn't matter. As long as it's in that computer, the time is still ticking. Well, get me back a few days. I got to have it. Sorry, you got to buy it.
Sometimes you can set your clock back, but not anymore.
Not anymore.
Who was that girl? It was an 11-year-old at DevCon, was it? She figured out one of the farming games. You have to wait 8 hours so you can harvest your cauliflower. She set the clock ahead on her phone and could harvest immediately.
Yep. One of the things that everybody needs to understand is that if you don't want to buy Office, you can use OpenOffice.
Yep.
OpenOffice reads Office documents, and it reads them perfectly. So, again, I always suggest in this particular, you know, I get annoyed when people say they can't spend the $10 or the $15 or the $20 mm-hmm. for a product. Very, but, very few people are that poor.
But $150 for Office, that's some real money.
That's a lot of money. So, yeah. So check out yeah. OpenOffice. I tell you, the one person I always admired most was Jim McCollum. You remember Jim from the Frog Computer User Group? He always said, I'm a Scot and I'm cheap. You know, that's it. Lay it out there and be honest about it.
He was also an avowed separationist of church and state.
Oh, yes.
Testitudes. We were stuck at a toll booth once, and he had to cross the god off his money before he could pay his toll.
Yes.
Separation of church and state. Yep.
Yep. He used to buy Scripps ink and refill his own cartridges with a syringe.
Boy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love Jim.
No, just going back to those old days when we had to do that.
Yeah.
Or the re-inking. Remember for the
add a little
ribbons?
WD-40. If you forgot that, the pins the pins on the dot matrix printers would.
The ribbon. No, I'm talking about the old ribbon.
Yeah, the ribbons.
When you redid the ribbons, you added a little touch of WD-40
because it also lubricated
the pins on the dot matrix.
I've actually resurrected that old technology, which is stick with two nails in it. We bought some receipt paper for our credit card machine.
Yeah.
It's too big to fit in the machine. Because you have to close the door before it'll print.
Right.
So I put a big spool on one nail and a little spool on another nail, and I use a drill to wind it around like the old printer ribbon.
Jeez.
Because it's cheaper when you buy it in bulk.
Yeah, exactly. Even if it doesn't fit, you can make it work. That's how many of those things? We used to have a whole bunch of people who come in with, hey, look what a cool thing I figured out how to do.
Oh yeah, no,
you know, that gets around everything else. But if you're not looking to pay for Office, and at $150, you know, that's, I would not be looking to pay for it either. OpenOffice at openoffice.org or LibreOffice, LIBRE Office, which is the spinoff of that. Either one of those is an excellent product, and you should take a look at those, download them. They're perfectly legal to have for free. I'm sorry to tell you, you're not stealing it. It's perfectly legal.
Microsoft Office is more.
LibreOffice.org?
Yeah.
Yeah. LibreOffice, LIBRE, office.org. If you're a Mac user, NeoOffice, which is at neoOffice.org.
It looks more Mac-like, but the general OpenOffice works just fine, too.
Right. But NeoOffice is essentially OpenOffice with a Mac look to it.
Microsoft Office is more than $150.
The Office Home and Student that home people would need is $150. The business version,
yeah, but they got to show a student ID to get that.
It's Home and Student. We checked with Microsoft, and we can sell it to home and student users. Everyone's a student of some sort, but they told us we don't have to check ID. It's not our job to be ID police.
Nice.
If a person buys it who is not a home user or is not a student, it's their responsibility to agree to the license.
Can't argue with that. But check it out. It's a great product. LibreOffice, OpenOffice, NeoOffice, depending on what machine you're on. Any of them work, and for free, certainly give it a try. What are you going to lose? A couple hours of your time.
Yeah. The one nice thing Microsoft did do is the home and student is a 3-pack for $150. So it's $50 a computer. But that's still $50 a computer when you can get it for free.
Jim from Syracuse just called and said that didn't work, so he's going to be pounding on it some more, and hopefully he'll let us know next week.
That didn't work?
No.
Wow. You sure you've got Office 2007? Because if he's, in fact, got Office 2003 or 10, he's clicked the wrong fix-it button.
Could be. You know, some people don't pay attention to that.
Well, and it may be that it also may be, in fact, that he got rid of 2007, but the image may have originally had 2003 on it, or
could be,
they updated it, they didn't pay attention to that.
Or it doesn't work because he's already tried to uninstall it.
Oh, yeah, once it knows that it's been in there, it won't redo it.
Yeah.
That's right.
So you may have...
there is a hidden bit that once the time is up, it's up.
You may have to reinstall it so you can uninstall it.
If he can, if the time is up, it's up.
Yeah it's up.
I have noticed with a lot of those, because people will try to uninstall, reinstall, get another 90 days, it still knows. So,
yeah.
But at least hidden. You can reinstall it and it's all there again.
Maybe Revo is the way to go.
But like I say, if it knows that it's already been on there and the time is up, it won't let them reinstall it.
Well, but if he goes into Revo and looks up Orphan...
Not if it's been out there. No, it's...
Maybe.
I haven't had much luck with that.
Right, but it can't hurt.
No.
It can't hurt to try.
Heck no. Highly suggest it, you know, but don't be surprised if it doesn't.
Right. Don't be surprised, but give it a shot. All right, I'm going to read this next news item.
Why don't you?
You know, before I do that, I'm going to tell you about that other program that I found.
Oh, yes.
It's called Email This Page, and it's an extension for Chrome. I don't know if there's a version for Firefox. I haven't looked yet. But for Chrome, there's a program called Email This Page.
I have that built into my Chrome.
There you go.
It's already built in. I don't need to add an extension.
Yeah. Yep.
And Firefox and Safari, too. Weird.
And what's that under?
Under the file menu.
Okay. Cool. But what's nice about this is you click on it, and it brings up either your default mail program or Gmail. You get to pick, because this extension is actually from Google. So those people who don't hate Google should take a look at this. And it lets you email that page to somebody, including, I suppose, yourself. And I'm always finding stuff on the web that I want to share with somebody, you know, and you have to copy and paste and yada, yada, yada. Now you just click the button. It brings up your regular email program, so your address book works and everything else. Shoot it off it goes. What I like about the Gmail one is that I click the button, it brings up Gmail. You send it. Once it's sent, it closes Gmail again. You're right back to that page you were at.
That
it's
is
a pretty
cool.
Nifty extension. I'm very impressed by it, as a matter of fact. All right, I'm finally going to get to the news.
Okay.
And I know you've been waiting for this one, ladies and gentlemen. Microsoft has begun talking about Windows 8. In general terms, reprising a blog-based strategy that it used in the year-long run-up to Windows 7. Microsoft kicked off the Building Windows 8 blog on Monday, almost exactly 3 years after the debut of a similar blog, Engineering Windows 7, that the company used to beat the Windows 7 drum. Both blogs were launched by Steven Sinofsky, the president of Microsoft's Windows and Windows Live division. On Wednesday, Sinofsky essentially confirmed that Windows 8 will support an app store, when he listed it as the title of one of 35 teams working on the operating system. Although Microsoft has publicly discussed a few bits of Windows 8, it has said nothing about integrating a download store with the new OS until now. Several Windows bloggers, however, reported finding signs of one in leaked previews of the OS several months ago. The question back then was whether Microsoft's App Store would be a curated market, the approach Apple has taken with the iOS App Store, or to a lesser extent the Mac App Store for the systems running Mac OS X. The term App Store is itself a bone of contention between Microsoft, Amazon, and Apple, with the first two arguing that the description isn't worthy of trademark protection. Apple has disputed that. In January, Microsoft asked the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, or Patent and Trademark Office if you're from England, to deny Apple's trademark application, arguing that because the term is generic, competitors should be able to use it. According to documents published by the USPTO's Trademark Trial and Appeal Board, both Apple and Microsoft have hired linguistic experts to argue that App Store is either not a generic term, which is Apple's position, or that it is generic, which is Microsoft's position.
Like tissue?
I don't even know you.
Thank you.
No, tissue is, in fact, a generic term. Kleenex is not. Refrigerator was not originally. Frigidaire is not. But they lost that right to it because everybody just used it interchangeably. Sinofsky listed a total of 35 teams that are working on Windows 8, which tells you something about how it's going to work. And some of his labels hinted at other core changes.
That's an oxymoron.
You're not kidding. Ranging from a hypervisor, which is a virtual machine manager, within the client edition, to improvements in Windows Update, which is Microsoft's consumer update service. Microsoft has been mum about a release schedule for Windows 8, but the timing of Sinofsky's return to blogging, 3 years and 1 day after the start of the similar effort for Windows 7, may hint at a parallel timeline. If that's the case, Windows 8 would launch in October 2012. The company will reveal more about Windows 8 and perhaps release a preview version of the OS at its Build conference, which will begin September 13th in Anaheim, California. So, can't wait for Windows 8? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ.
One word to the technical team there. Leave the programs in the control panel alone!
Yeah, no. Stop kidding. Moving them.
Yes, and renaming them. Hello, what was wrong with add, remove, programs. Because no, they had to turn around and change it to programs and features. Duh.
Yeah. You know, why
would you ever want to remove one?
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, our numbers are 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
If pattern holds, Windows 8 will be crap. Every other version of Windows has been crap.
Yeah, see, the even version.
XP was good, Vista bad. I mean, before that, ME bad, 98 good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 7 good, 8 bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they have to do Windows 8.
Yeah.
And here's why. It's the first story we talked about, the earlier story we talked about, which is the fact that people are abandoning the PC market,
mm-hmm.
and I put that in air quotes, abandoning the PC market for mobile apps, mobile devices. And Windows does not run well on mobile devices. There is the Windows Phone 7, but it's not really Windows. And what Microsoft really needs is a Windows-like product that will run across all platforms the way Android is, the way iOS almost is. And so they need that, and they don't really have it. Unfortunately, they're locked into the Windows mold. Instead of a companion product, they'll try to duplicate it. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound. Look, I can't help it. I like that song.
Huey Lewis.
Like the intro.
It's Van Halen.
Is it?
Yeah. It's the David Lee Roth Van Halen.
Oh, okay.
Van Halen.
Yeah. I got to do up a CD of my own.
Well, the joke was he's been out of it now longer than he was in it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it just reminds me, though, that some of the sound effects here on the board, like, you know, the cheer.
Have a terrible delay in them.
Yeah, so what I'm going to do is do up my own CD. Like, I've been playing a lot of my own intro music, and when we go in and out, I've just been grabbing some.
Rob, of course, is not listening, because, you know.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't know. But if he ever listens, somebody who knows him and is listening should remind him that there's horrible delays on some of the.
No, I'm just.
Well, and the question is that the sound effect or is that the software? Just taking forever to.
I don't know, but I can sit there with Total Recorder, sit there and chop it up the way I want, burn it to CD myself. I'm going to put together my own CDs and start compiling some other music tunes to have the intros and exits that fit us.
Sure. All right. Our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George.
And welcome, George.
And welcome, George. George just walked in, and we have George on the line. Welcome, George. What's your question?
It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a joy to have you. What can we do for you?
I just heard in the background you're talking about Total Recording.
Yeah.
And that's a recommendation you fellas gave me a week or so ago. I haven't yet ordered it, but I did go onto their website, and it looks like a terrific package.
It's a phenomenal package.
I love it.
Yeah.
So here's what I'm faced with today. Either in something I'm not doing right or not as well as perhaps I should. But I find with my computer, now I'm talking about a desktop, and I'm operating with Windows XP Home Edition. And it has to do with opening up various applications. In particular, for example, this morning I was trying to open Microsoft Office Outlook, and it it kind of staggers around and takes forever to come up. And
that's normal.
You click on it, you get the sand dial,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes it comes up real well, and other times it comes up very, very slow.
You know what it's telling you?
I'm listening.
Go to Thunderbird. Outlook is one of the most dangerous, I'm sorry, and maybe I'm prejudiced, but I consider Outlook to be one of the most dangerous products to use because that's where 99% of all the viruses, Trojans, and malware are geared towards is to attack that program.
And just from
through attachments and everything else.
Just from programmatic view, Outlook stores all of your database in one giant file. So all of your email is in this one giant database file.
Okay.
So the more email you have, the bigger that file is, the longer it takes to open. How much memory do you have in your computer?
Let's see. I just jotted that down here. 504 meg.
That is way too little. You should have at least 2,000 meg.
So here's
just
the deal.
To run with that program?
No, well...
Well, basically, yeah.
Here's the deal. Yeah. If you've got a 512 meg machine...
He's running Windows XP, though, Steve.
Well, but you can run it with that. But if you load more than one program at a time, you're certainly going to run up against that slow opening thing. Because what happens is, when they say the minimum RAM is 512, that means to run Windows. Oh, you want to run another program with it? You better have more RAM.
Yep.
Another 512, at least.
At least another 512. And here's why. There's only a limited amount of RAM inside the machine. So if you try to load too many programs at once, and with 512 mega RAM, that's two. If you try to load a second program, the system has to say, oh, you know what, I don't have enough room. So what parts of the first program have you not used in a while? Let me switch those out to disk so I've got room to load this new program into RAM. Well, while RAM is pretty fast, hard drive is slow. So when you have to load a piece out, load a piece in, load a piece out, load a piece in, load a piece out, load a piece in, you'll find the light on your hard drive flashes all the time, and the system slows down terribly until it's loaded that new program. Then if you switch to the first one again, the same thing has to happen in reverse, and it's now more of a problem. So if you can add more RAM to that machine, you'll find you're much happier.
Well, now why is it that, and I don't usually have very many programs open at one time, And if I do, it's typically a fairly small Excel spreadsheet.
No, there is no such thing as a small spreadsheet.
There's a small spreadsheet. Excel itself is huge in memory and resource hog.
Right. But before you load the spreadsheet, you have to load Excel, which takes up the 512 meg all by itself.
Along with the operating system.
Right. So, yes, you're right. Yeah, any of these programs will load in 512 meg. Multiple versions of these programs, or multiple programs rather, will not, and that's a problem that you have to understand with 512 meg of RAM.
Okay.
There's no shortcut on that.
If you're especially unlucky, it's your Outlook database corrupted.
Which can happen when you have too little RAM.
What is it? What's the tool? It's the inbox repair tool. Somewhere in your computer somewhere. Let me see if I can find where it puts it. There's the inbox repair tool. It might be in control panels. It's a tool that Microsoft includes with Outlook because they know Outlook can kill itself.
It gets messed up.
It can kill itself. And includes this inbox repair tool to fix the Outlook database. And here's the article. We were there before, too.
So, Steve, I follow you on that. However, if I shut down and start up, my system seems to work quite well.
Right, because you've just freed all your memory, and now you're starting over with your memory allocation.
Well, plus XP was known for having memory leak.
Well, right. I think the memory leak is the direction I want to go in for a minute as you wind up the show here. But I wanted to go back and say if it's a corrupted data file for the Word Office, if it's corrupted, it's corrupted, isn't it? Shutting down doesn't correct that.
No, so I'm not worried that much about that. George, you seem to be unwilling to accept the fact that you don't have enough RAM.
Oh,
I get that, but the reality is you don't.
Well,
and if you're going to run...
This thing works fine for certain periods of time.
Until the memory fills up.
That's specifically a memory problem.
And I think I understand that. I'm not anxious to go out and add more memory to it. But help me with one last question. If I want to kind of clear it out, is there any difference between doing a log off as opposed to a restart?
A log off doesn't necessarily
clear cache. Doesn't clear cache out.
So I got to power down.
Yep.
That's the key.
Well, and that's going to stress the hardware components of your system.
Yep.
A cold
So you need to be aware that will shorten the life of your computer.
Restart.
A warm restart might be better than a cold boot.
Restart.
I'm sorry. You're talking over each other. Which is better?
A warm restart.
A warm restart.
Yeah. Rather than a shutdown cold on reboot from cold.
And that should clear out all of the memory.
Should. Nobody's going to promise that.
Yeah.
But for all intent and purposes, it does attempt to clean that out.
It does.
It cleans out some of it anyway.
So I should be getting a fresh start.
Right.
Right.
Load in a few programs.
So if you restart your computer 4 or 5 times a day, you should be fine. Well, I'm not going to lie to you. That's sort of thing you're going to come up against.
And that's the symptom of needing more memory.
Yeah, it's life in the big city.
If when you reboot, it's fine, you don't have enough memory.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That is how it works.
I accept your diagnosis.
Thank you, sir.
I probably should need to buy a new computer.
Yeah.
I'm not anxious to have memory to this.
Well, the thing that is, though, is, this Christmas season, I think, and even starting right now with the kids going back to school, there's some good buys out there right now that you can take advantage of and get some great deals. A friend of mine got a notebook, a nice 15-inch, loaded for under $400 with Windows 7 and 6 gig of memory, 320 gig hard drive, DVD burner. Where are you going?
Yeah, it depends on the model as to whether or not that's a long-term good buy.
Man. Yeah.
Well, but Dave, on one hand, I hear you talking about the bargain combinations,
mm-hmm.
and then in another breath, I hear you talking about you got to pay for quality, and you lead me to believe that I shouldn't just go hunting for that.
That was my point in saying it depends.
One of the problems is the way Intel markets their chips. You know, there's the i5, the i7, those are the current chips.
Yes.
They have a very, very fast chip, and you're going to pay $2,000 for a computer that has that chip in it. And then they have the really, really cheap chip, and that's the $400 computer. So it's always the trade-off. Even though it says i7 on it, the clock speed it runs at, the cache it has in it, level 2, level 3 cache.
It's what people are willing to pay. Yes,
yeah.
I still, for me and my business, I still promote, buying locally, and, my systems carry a 3-year warranty.
Ooh. It's like buying a car. If you buy a lower-end car, you can expect to get a few years out of it. You buy a higher-end car, you expect to get more years out of it. There's no magic in buying cars, and there's no magic in buying computers.
Okay.
All right?
Good. Thanks for the advice.
Thank you. We're going to be done. We're done. We're done for another week. You've now taken 2 entire hours of your life that you will never get back by listening to this show. We couldn't possibly be more grateful. Unless you were to pay us, and you could, I suspect. We'll have to give you our PayPal information. Pledge Drive is coming soon, exactly. We want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks to each and every one of you called in. We really appreciate that. We're done, and when we come back next week, we're going to have a whole lot more of you and us and every other dang thing there is. But in the meantime, thank you so much for our show. George is coming in. He's going to do the German show. It's great music. You should stay tuned. And we are Soundbites right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.